Welcome back to the Discovering Forestry podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Corey Lofi, alongside our friend, Mr. Arbor Joe Aitken, here for another compelling conversation about trees. Joe, it's a fun time of year. Leaves are changing. Temperatures are cooling off. Football is back. Soccer is back. Man, it's just a comforting time of year. How are you faring this time of year?
And don't forget football.
I can't forget football.
Football's back. Hockey's coming. I think opening day at Red Wings is going to be October 7th, I believe, this year.
Drop the puck.
It's an exciting time of the year, sports-wise. And wrapping up things. You know, trees are starting to change. Get out of the plant health care a little bit. Guys will start doing some climbing and some fall, winter pruning. Changing gears. I'm not sure what you guys have in the west side. But over here are oaks and elms and a lot of evergreens. We wait until off season to do the pruning so you don't open up the vascular system to any insects or diseases. So it's a different time of the year, and I enjoy it. I enjoy it right up until I'm told that I'm doing it wrong by somebody. So it's going to be an interesting conversation today, and I'm going to bring that up with our guest and see if it ever happens out that way too. So it was a fun day right until then. So,
well, I'm glad to hear it. It's always a pleasure to get a chance to hang out with you and our other tree peeps and talk trees, talk shop. And our guest tonight is actually, he's from further west and north than where I am in Colorado. He's out of Seattle, Washington, which is in the Pacific Northwest, USA, to any of our listeners from overseas. And I first met our guest. We actually had tacos together. I don't know if you remember that. We had tacos together at a climbing contest. It must have been a year or two ago in Denver, but got kind of reacquainted at the most recent ISA event in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So without any further ado, if it's okay with everybody, I'll just bring on our guest for today from Tree 133 out of Seattle, Washington, Craig Bachman. Craig, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, Joe and Corey, it's awesome to be here with y'all. Thank you so much. It's I've been looking forward to this.
All right. You say that now, but go ahead. No, I've met you a bunch of times too. So we're glad to have you on and we're excited. Like the pre before we hit record, we were kind of letting you know, but just let the listeners know a little bit about you and your journey into what you do for a living now, and how'd you get there?
Man, oh, that's a broad question. I'll try to keep it a little bit tight for us. I am a second career arborist. It took me 12 years of being what my wife calls suit guy for me to recover and become tree guy. And for those of you I haven't met, I started Dragon Brush when I was 35 years old. And I don't know how old Corey is, but he's laughing right now. But I started Dragon Brush at 35, getting buried by 20-year-olds in the tree, and I had to prove that I could keep up. And I got to the end of that first week, and my wife looks at all the scratches down my arms and the holes in my, my Carhartts, and she says, "Honey, are you sure this is a good idea?" And so that's in the middle of the story. As a kid, I grew up in Chicago, actually, and I went to summer camp in Colorado, and I got introduced to the mountains. I got introduced to rock climbing. And so rock climbing became a hobby and a passion of mine, and I ended up going to school for environmental science and had a chance to study abroad in New Zealand that really got me excited about trees worldwide and ecological communities I wasn't familiar with. And then I got out of school and I said, "What do you do with an environmental science degree?" And what I learned is nothing. You go to graduate school, not going to do it. Or you go become a research assistant and work for free, not going to do it. So I kind of fell into doing work that I got connected to through my parents and ended up in the training world. Ended up doing professional product knowledge and skills training for large manufacturers like DuPont and 3M and Heister and Yale Forklifts and New Holland Agriculture and a bunch of companies like that. Sherwin-Williams Paints, of all things. Don't even get me started on what I know about paint. But that was a different life. That was suit guy. Now, I didn't wear a suit, but conceptually suit guy. Did that for a while, traveled a whole bunch. And my wife and I started our own company doing that locally in Denver where we were living. Did that for a few years. And I literally woke up Christmas morning of 2011 having a midlife crisis. And I said, honey, I'm not doing this anymore. And she said, you know, we're both unemployed if you make that decision. And I said, I know, but I ain't doing this anymore. And the next day I was sitting there at my laptop, pulled up Craigslist, searched for every job that had the word climb in it. And I found these arborist trainee positions. And on Friday, the 13th of January, my favorite day, I've got a tattoo of the number 13. On Friday, the 13th, I got hired into arboriculture. I started Monday, the 16th, and I haven't looked back. And I'm coming up on 12 years now. I don't know. I lose track. My math isn't so good. But that is my journey from outdoor kid to suit guy and back to my senses into arboriculture.
That's pretty cool. You know, you're right, Craig. It's a tough leap later in life. But it's got to be a rewarding leap. This is a pretty, we've had some pretty cool guests on here, and I think they've all come to the same consensus that is, this is a pretty amazing industry. Welcoming, you're, like I said, with your natural science background, you kind of fit right in, you know, with the rock climbing. And another good thing about this industry is how welcoming it is. If you can drag brush, man, they love you. You know what I mean? So welcome, and welcome to tonight. So that's cool.
It's quite a community, Joe. You're hitting all the high points there. The welcoming, I would say, of certain parts of our profession, others maybe a little more suspicious of suit guy when he first started. I joke that I started at the White Trash Tree Company, but I started learning from a pretty rough crowd, and I'm glad for it. And many of them are still friends of mine. Because I learned what it takes, and I learned how to do it the hard way, and I learned what it means to go out and throw down for 10 or 12 hours when you need to, and it just has to get done.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Yeah, thanks, Joe. Let's talk about that for a second. So, Craig, what does your day-to-day look like now?
It's pretty much the opposite of that, except that it's now 12 to 16 hours a day. And I'm not dragging brush. And as Corey and I were talking about before the show started, Tree 133 is my company that my wife, Joanna, and I run together. And we now have 5 arborists in the field, which they're amazing. They're the best team of people I could ever imagine. And I hope they hear that because I want them to know. And my day really is spending time talking to people, primarily talking to people about trees. And I'm pretty excited. I've climbed 8 trees this year. None of them I've been paid to climb. All of them were in some sort of a volunteer training development capacity. Most recently, this last Friday, we actually took, most of the afternoon, and our whole team went over to a local park we have a relationship with, and we set up a work climb event that we all ran together and competed. And a little plug for myself, I'll give you one guess who won.
Your wife.
Good guess. But no, back to your question, Corey. My role is really developing our team and developing our client base and spending time working with people and talking with people about trees, whether it's internally or externally with our clients. My role is business development and leadership.
I love it. And it's going to lead me right into my story I have our listeners, and I'm going to get your take on it, Craig, because you're well-versed, well-spoken, very professional. And I consider Corey and I in the same boat. You know, we really take this industry to heart. We love what we do. I've been doing almost 40 years now. So I got a few years and I kind of know a thing or two about a tree. So I was at a situation where a friend of mine had a friend of his helping him limb up some evergreens. I think they were red pines next to this crab apple. And this guy is my neighbor Jim's friend's wife was there too. So I'm like, all right. So I kind of go over there because you hear something going on. You got to check it out. Something to do with trees. It's just, hey, if you need help. So they're stubbing it. And it's horrible what they're doing to this red pine. So I'm like, all right, whatever. So he's like, well, what should I do with this crab apple underneath? I says, why don't you just shape it a little bit, clean it up. You got some, I was telling him about phototropism. It was growing out of the woods. You could probably cut that back, get that rounded up, and it'll look good. This woman goes to me, nope, you can't touch that tree at this time of the year. I'm like, oh, really? Why not? She goes, it'll open it up for insects and diseases. I'm like, is that so? I says, well, what about the pines? And she looked at me, and then she managed to turn around quickly. Well, they're different. I says, well, what's different about them? I says, so if you open up an evergreen, I says, what's the difference for insect and disease in those? Well, now she gets argumentatively. So we're talking about that. I can't do this. And she goes, my brother, or first she goes, I'm involved with the Master Gardener program at Michigan State University.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know that I was talking to a weed puller. That's not a disrespect to the right. Master Gardening program, but it was the disrespect to her. I'm like, well, I've been doing herbiculture for 40 years, and I'm pretty sure that if you have to take a few branches off that crab apple, you're not going to have a problem. No. And I find out she's not even the Master Gardener. It's her brother. So I was like, all right, well, I'm not going to win this conversation. So what I'm going to do is I'm not going to say another word. And I'm just kidding. I told my buddy Jim, I said, Jim, good luck. If you need anything, call me later. And I walked away. I went back to the house and my wife Laura's like, what are you all pissed off about? And I told her the story. She goes, you got to let that stuff go. I says, you know what? I can let some stuff go, but there's some things you just can't. And later that day, Jim came over and says, you know what? Yeah. Sometimes she's like that. She knows everything. I'm like, yes, she does. She's amazing. So I got to go back there and prune the crab apple anyways, but at least she won't be there. So we have all ran into stuff like that. I'm sorry for rambling, but
no, you're fine.
It fired me up. Craig, give us an example of a situation with your expertise that happened in talk us out of that. How do you handle, us three here can talk about trees all to we're blue in the face. We get it. When you get to someone that think they know, how do you convince them? We keep talking about, well, it's customer education. You got to educate them. I think at times there's some people you just can't educate. What do you think?
I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah, I made a little cross promotion on episodes for you. I was listening to your Tree First Herbiculture episode. And yep. It really resonated with me. And one of the things that stuck with me or was validating for me is there's some clients you don't want. Yep. There are some clients who we are not well aligned with. And I can think of a few sort of categories off the top of my head. The view pruning topping crowd. Nope. The turn it all into a bonsai crowd. Nope. Yep. And we are really diligent with anyone who contacts us. We actually have a phone conversation with every single inquiry before I go out to see them because I am so not down with wasting my time.
That's pre-qualifying.
Let's get pre-qualifying. Let's talk about that because I think that's something that Joe and I talk to enough companies, businesses, business owners, and they're like, I've got, 30 estimates to do today and tomorrow. And I'm bidding up against 15, 20 people. And, some people never even open the email or get back. How do you pre-qualify? What are you looking for in your ideal client?
Oh, now you're asking all the good questions, Corey. What are we looking for? We're looking for people who want advice, not just a price.
Oh, I like that.
I like that. It rhymes. And so what I'm looking for is to hear that people are looking for input. They're looking for guidance. They're looking to make an informed decision. And I regularly say to people, these are your trees, not mine. It's not my house. It's not my money, but I want you to understand the trees better and make a decision based on accurate, biologically correct information, not just based on what somebody's daddy told them.
Heck yeah.
And so the way we go about finding that is a few things. And I don't know, maybe I'm giving away the secret sauce here, but I'll tell you a secret. We don't answer the phone. When someone contacts us, it goes right to voicemail and it says, hey, we're really sorry we've missed you. Please go to our website, fill out our contact form so we can understand your needs and serve you better. So we already get information. We call it creating friction. The idea being that if they are not willing to do that, I'm probably not willing to drive out there. Nice. And so they fill out our form, and then my wife, Joanna, goes through and screens everything that comes in. Things that she feels are straightforward and a good fit for us, she'll call directly. And she worked in the field for a year and a half. She comes from a sales management background. She is perfectly capable of having these initial pre-qualifying conversations and does a great job and schedules a bunch of really good appointments. For things that she's not sure about, she sends them over to me. And I can either, for lack of a better term, throw them away, which is our polite way of saying, we're going to send them to someone else, or just send them a message that says, I apologize, I don't think we're the right company to help you. Or I can call them and get more information. Because what I've learned in all aspects of life is that time is our most precious resource, the thing we can never get back. And dragging my carcass all over town to talk to people who don't want what we offer, who aren't looking for good advice, and they just want me to cut what they point at, is not how I'm going to spend my life. And I've got what I call the just theory. And that is when someone starts to say, I just need this or I just need that, I just need to get away. Because using the word just in any sort of context minimizes what's going to come next. I just need you to cut that limb off. And what they mean is, I'd do it myself if I had the damn tools, but I don't. So I need you guys to come out here and do it. But it must not be very hard because I could do it. Mm. So anytime somebody starts saying just, I just need to get away.
That's interesting how you've set up trigger words that guide you in a decision. And I like the fact that I really, truly like your, that it's not just, we're not going to give out price. We're going to give out advice. That's a great, it is a great sticker. I wasn't just joking, but I had a situation again recently where a guy was like, oh, these trees are dying. They're in the woodlot. They're coming my way. And I was like, buddy, that's not an insect or disease. Is there a creek nearby? Has this been flooded recently? Why is the woodlot dying? He's like, well, I just thought you'd come out here and spray something. I said, dude, it's bigger than me. This isn't just one tree dying in your front yard, brother. This is an acre of trees dying, and it's creeping towards you. And I says, you need to get hold of the county. This is bigger than what you think you got going on. And he's like, oh, my God, really? I'm like, yeah, really. And I says, I'm not the guy for you. And I had to walk. I told him to walk away. But
isn't it amazing, too, that, do you know, obviously, Craig, if you're calling people, you know, it's going to voicemail or calling people, whatever, you're not running into the same issue that or maybe you are and just avoiding it altogether. But a lot of people nowadays are just calling and going, hey, how much to remove a tree? Don't you love that question? Hey, how over the phone? Hey, how much to remove a pine tree in the front yard? And you show up and it's a giant spruce or, you know, something like that. You get anything like that, or you probably qualify those out or disqualify those unqualified?
Well, like you and I were talking about before, our business is primarily tree preservation. We do that through consulting, through pruning, through plant health care, through root work, through planting. But about 10% of our revenue is tree removals. And I actually like removing trees. I think it's a really cool technical process, but only when the tree really needs to come out. I got really tired as a contract climber of removing trees that somebody else decided they didn't like. And now I show up and hang my head and get my spikes. I'm not doing that anymore. I started my own company to get away from that nonsense. When someone calls me and says, how much? I've been known to tell them $1 million. And they say, well, how do you know? I said, I don't know, but I don't know anything about your tree. And so it might be $1 million. And that's intended to be funny, but I have been hung up on before. What I try to figure out is how big is the tree? And also, why do you want to remove it? Heck, I ask people that with pruning. Somebody says, I need to prune this tree. And I said, great, why? And they say, well, because it needs to be pruned. And then we have a whole discussion about why trees really don't want to be pruned, that we prune them for people rather than trees. But on the removal side, I'm not against helping people with removals. There are some trees that need to come out. As a pruning company, we're not equipped with cranes and grapple trucks and mini skids. We do a lot of very technical climbing. We work in backyards with stairs and gates and terrible drop zones. And in our world, things come out of trees in very small pieces because there's nowhere to put a big piece. And so when a tree is bigger than we want to deal with, I gladly refer it to other companies we have good relationships with here in town. But the few trees that we deal with, yeah, when it needs to come out, I'm more than happy to help. But I always ask the question, why? Why do you want to remove the tree? And as soon as the word view comes out, As soon as the, well, I think it's sick. Oh, really? How about you send me a few pictures? Let's take a look and I can give you some advice. And many people will, which is mostly me not driving.
You really are efficient.
Yeah, send me a picture. Oh, yeah. What's wrong with my tree? I wrote that down before you even said it. Yeah, send me a picture. That's like a million miles away.
Joe and I get pictures all day long with ArborJet customers. And you know, most of them are in the tree industry or the landscape industry, so they know what to kind of do and frame. But you hit another big thing on the head. So you're pre-qualifying customers. You're sticking with your niche market that you're very well-versed. You've got an awesome team behind you. And you're being efficient with your time. If you don't need to drive out there, if you could diagnose it over the phone or maybe do some education over the phone. And these are all things that I think our listeners are going to take from this conversation and hopefully incorporate it into their day to day. But that just seems like a smoother way of doing business.
I think it is.
Before I was here at the old, the company, I used to do a lot of work with Kevin Bingham. And you're talking 25 years ago. Kevin started that 25, 30 years ago. Now, I believe because he was riding a bicycle and had a saw and a trailer behind his bicycle around town. But he was the first guy that I've ever seen say, no, I won't take that tree down, and would drive away. You know, if it was a beautiful red oak in someone's front yard, picture perfect. But like he said, view. They didn't like it no more. They didn't want to rake up leaves. He says, I'm not the guy for you. And I think more guys need to do that. I really do.
Well, it is scary, Joe. I think is the reason we don't do it. It's scary. Turning away work as a small business, as a growing company with mouths to feed, can be terrifying. And my wife and I run this company together. And family business is great because you can lay in bed at night, terrified about what's happening, and just have something to talk about, right? What else do you want to talk about at 2 a.m.?
Yeah, what do you got? But, what are you doing tomorrow? Nothing. We got nothing.
Our baby's diaper. God bless. But
the conversations come up like, hey, so I turned this one away today. Did I do the wrong thing? And she'll say to me, or I'll say to her, no, it's the right thing. You know it's the right thing because that's not who we are. That's not what we do. And by sticking to what we believe in, to our principles, to our set of values, we are more true to ourselves and we are more true to our clients.
And I think you're in the long term, you're creating a more sustainable company. You know, they're not customers anymore. They become clients, they become friends, they become family. And they call you more than once a year. They call you for the little things. And you earn their trust. And then it's not a bidding war anymore. They don't care what it costs anymore. Greg, they want you out there. They want you and your team out there. And that's what's amazing that you built. And yeah, you guys don't have to worry about diapers no more. Or anything like that. You know, if you do it right, people will call.
And it is reassuring to me, Joe, to hear you say that. We are 7 years into this, I guess 5 years really focus. And it's growing like we never imagined. And sometimes that's the hardest part. But there are moments that are trying. When the economy slows down, when the phone doesn't ring, when there's incredible pricing competition. We saw prices go down 25% this spring.
Wow.
And we had 6 and 7 quotes for work. And it was absolutely dog eat dog. And fortunately, we've come out of that because that's just bad for everybody. And that was trying and sticking to what do we do and what are we about and what is our core service? What is our message is really challenging in those moments. But Joe, you're exactly right. It's what you have to do because that builds something sustainable.
Yes.
Yeah, and for a lot of those purely removal companies, and there are a lot of people who specialize in that big, nasty cottonwood, you know, for property, crane job removal. There are people that specialize and they make a living and they're doing that, and that's awesome. I was told kind of as I was really cutting my teeth in the tree world that if you do a tree removal correctly, you can do it exactly once. If you can kind of clean up a tree, maybe properly prune it and treat for disease and do some air spade or air knife work, you can maintain a tree for as long as you keep that tree alive and that customer healthy and happy. And it sounds like you're doing a pretty good job of that, Craig. So I commend you on that and for breaking the mold. You know, I think it is sometimes those big monster removals can be attractive to go after, but they also, man, they take a toll on the body, the equipment, the mind. I mean, they really do. So yeah, major props for that.
And I've been on both sides of it. I'm proud to say I've never worked for the tree slaughter companies, but when I was in Denver, I worked for a company that had a lot of technical capabilities and our in-house crane and those kinds of things. And I did a lot of big, very technical crane removals, and that's enough. Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of people who are itching to do that. And being 47 now, I am not one of them. And I like to tell clients that as a professional arborist, I've chosen to use my powers for good rather than evil. And keeping trees around is the best thing I think I can do.
I think what's interesting is, as I'm, you know, I'm 57 and I see light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I can see a retirement someday. I don't think I'll ever retire from the tree business, but maybe corporate world. I think I'll always be involved with trees, but we have on the preservation side of arboriculture, we have an aging community. And one question I've asked other guests is, how do you make preservation plan healthcare alluring? I was going to try to say sexy, but you know, it's not as cool as climbing, Craig. You know that. You go to the ITCC, you were there. Man, people are all geeked and pumped up and swinging around. And people are like, oh, my God, that's awesome. And then you go out there with a magnifying glass looking for bugs. You know, people like, you can hear him yelling nerd from across the backyard. How do we make that, which to me is more of what your education is in the background about environmental science, how do you make that cool?
I think there's two parts to it. One is, I think tree preservation is what makes climbing sexy, because there's way more climbing crown reducing a spectacular tree than there is cutting it down. But putting that part aside, I think we need to look at arboriculture as a career rather than a job. I think there is a lot to be said for having experience climbing trees, pruning trees, removing trees before getting into a consulting role. Without naming names and making people upset, I have had challenges in the past working with consultants who've never climbed trees. As Dr. Shigo said, you have to touch trees. And touching the bark standing on the ground is only so much. Being up in the tree and feeling how an overextended limb moves and feeling the difference when you make proper pruning cuts and reduce that weight and bring the center of mass back, and how that limb feels differently, or how the whole tree moves differently in the process of a removal, and you can feel the changes and the loss of damping when lateral limbs come off. That climbing experience, I believe, is essential to understanding trees and tree function and tree physiology. And so I think we need to look at arboriculture as something that is an arc, that we start in one area, we grow through others, moving to something else, rather than climbing is a job, rather than plant healthcare is a job. These all fit together in a puzzle. And the more pieces we can have experience with, the more comprehensive our knowledge, the more well-rounded we are when the time comes that we realize climbing ain't forever.
Yeah.
So
I think you're alluding without knowing, Corey and I have an opportunity in November at TCI Expo to have a podcast that we're going to do. So I think you're alluding to kind of the direction that I think that needs to go there. And we can't give it out yet, because we're going to build up the excitement, but I think you're absolutely right. The more that you've done, I think you have to start by drag and brush. You have to run a chipper. You got to get in the tree. You got to go up there. You got to understand the whole tree as a system and how it works in that micro environment. And if you can't do that, and I've run into consulting arborist that never been off the ground before, that could read a manual and became a certified arborist and never left the ground. And I'm like, oh my God, I just, some of the decisions without really understanding it, it is kind of frustrating to see that happen on a daily basis.
I'm with you, Joe. And Craig, as we're trying to draw tonight's conversation to a close, and you reflect back on some of your personal experiences, whether it's what you were doing 10 years ago or what you're doing on your day-to-day now, what piece of advice would you share with somebody else in the industry? What insight or knowledge would you like to pass on?
Oh, great question. I think it's learn as much as you can about every aspect of trees. We need to understand soils. We need to understand mycorrhizal fungal interactions. We need to understand root growth. We need to understand decay. We need to understand dynamic loading and tree movement and responses. We need to understand growth patterns. We need to understand hormonal imbalances. This list goes on and on forever. And there are things on that list that I feel woefully underprepared about. Yeah. And we need to continue filling in these gaps in our knowledge. Because like Joe, you brought up, there will come a day where climbing ain't an option anymore. Either it'll be your choice or the world will choose for you. And the more that you know, the more prepared you are to look and think and act and speak about trees as a whole, the more options you're going to have.
I couldn't agree more. You hit that bridge one day in your life. And I think I hit mine. And I think we talked about this on a previous podcast. I hit my bridge where I decided that I don't need to get off the ground anymore at ITCC in Albuquerque this year. Don't get me wrong. I loved watching the comp. It was amazing. I told Corey this. I'm like, this is the first time in 40 years. I think I finally came to that point where I don't need to be up there anymore. I felt confident with the talented climbers out there that I don't need to be. Man, there's some pretty amazing people out there. And we got a great network of amazing climbers that if we ever needed somebody to help out, we could always find somebody. So I'm going to keep my feet on the ground, play with the chainsaw, get the sawmill going, and whittle wood. That's what I'm going to do.
Well, Craig, once again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Joe, I always enjoy our time together, and I hope our listeners really got some good value out of this conversation. I think they did. And before we sign off, Craig, on a personal note, congratulations for the milestone that you're about to hit with your company. And
thank you.
I wish you nothing but continued success and safety in the day-to-day. So thanks again.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Corey, and thank you, Joe. We do this again sometime and look forward to seeing you in St. Louis here in 2 months.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, great topic today.
Yes, lots of good information.
Yeah, probably one of our best yet.
If you enjoyed the podcast or have topics you would like to discuss, please send them to discoveringforestry@gmail.com. And please hit the subscribe button and tell a friend.
Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Joe.
And I'm Corey.
Signing out.